If you're interested in these kind of topics, you're in the right place. Connection Therapy Podcast talks about these and more topics all the time. And on occasion, we have special courses to take the learning further. And I'd like to let you know about one of those coming up in May. Dr. Janet Jones will present 6 neurological reasons for horses' excellence as therapy animals. If you're familiar with the work of Dr. Janet Jones, you're likely aware she has expertise in human brains and horse brains, and she combines her skills to talk about the neuroscience of horsemanship. And it has a lot of contributions to mental health therapy, which is why I'm thrilled she will be presenting this for us in May. Link in the show notes if you'd like to learn more about this event. We'd love to see you there. Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. Okay, we're back for the final section of my interview with Dr. Janet Jones. As I mentioned in the past, Dr. Janet Jones applies brain science to the training of horses and riders. She earned her PhD from UCLA and taught the neuroscience of perception, language, memory, and thought for 23 years. Janet travels all over the world explaining brain-based horsemanship. She co-teaches large animal behavior at Colorado State University Veterinary School and consults on equine topics with companies such as Disney World and Nissan Motor Corporation. She has authored multiple books, including 2 books that are how I ran onto her work. The first is called Horse Brain, Human Brain, The Neuroscience of Horsemanship. And the upcoming one later this year is entitled A Horse's World, A Neuroscientist's Journey into the Equine Mind. So you can see there are many ways that I overlap with Dr. Jones's interests, and I'm thrilled to invite her to the podcast today.
So sometimes it really helps to teach people find another person's best way of building trust and try to use it to your advantage.
Yeah, that's lovely. Yeah, thank you. So, well, there we go. That was one of the next questions I think I had in mind to ask you about is perhaps we just gave some possibilities, but your thoughts on things we could learn from horses, particularly to improve our relationships with other humans. And that, I think, is what is happening here. And I often use the analogy of like speaking another language. I became a better English speaker when I learned French because I learned some of it's still debatable of how well I speak either language, but I learned to parse out parts of English that I didn't even know having grown up in that environment of, you know, what different verb conjugations are and how to, you know, how French is different than it sort of makes you focus on how you're speaking English and because you know the differences. And I've thought about that with learning about horses. It feels like we learn more about humans by realizing that there are so many things that are unique to humans because they're not shared with horses. And we had a lot of things in our book club come up about learning empathy that way. And I wonder if you wanted to elaborate any more on that.
I think humans have a lot to learn from horses. I know that in my life, I have solved many a human problem by using techniques that I discovered with horses. And these techniques, I think, are good for the horses, but they're also techniques that we can apply to purely human interactions. One thing that's really necessary for working with horses is taking time. Humans really need to slow down when they're working with horses. This is a very common problem that I see every day. that, you know, everyone wants to hurry and rush. Everyone expects that the horse should understand what is expected in two or three trials, or should be able to simply, quote, figure it out without being explicitly taught. And I don't think that's true. I think that horses, in order to perform really well and to create a true bond of trust, I think that horses need a lot of time together with the human. So we can slow down when we work with them. We also need to take time to just sit on the fence and watch horses go about their natural lives and learn more about them. And I think there's a real lesson for that in human interaction too. Very often when we meet new people or try to deepen an existing relationship, whether it's a friendship or a romantic relationship or any kind of interaction between two people, I think we often rush and we don't give other people the amount of time that they really need. We rush our conversations. We don't allow enough pausing or silence for maybe more introverted people to join the conversation. I think all of that is very important. And then another thing that is critical in addition to time, we already talked about a little bit, which is precision. Mm-hmm. Like I was saying earlier, horses communicate with other horses and with us through very, very tiny movements, movements that are very easy to miss if you don't realize that you need to be paying attention to them. And so I think that helps also when we transfer our horse knowledge to interactions with other people, that we need to look for the tiny details, not just wait until a huge reaction happens. You know, there's a great big blow up, and then we realize, whoops, I must have done something wrong there. Uh-huh. But if we were looking at a more subtle level, I think we probably would be able to sense that there's a problem coming before it actually arrives. And then maybe we could kind of turn it back the other way before things get too bad. The third thing I think is really important is we have to learn how to move past our own egos. There is nothing like a horse that will humble your ego.
That's true.
I often tell people, you know, when I have some kind of new thing coming out, I have a new book coming out pretty soon. That's a great example, or anything like that. And people say, you know, do you ever just feel that everything is just going along so well? And I do, of course. Yes, there are times when I do feel like that. My horses bring me back down to the earth very, very quickly. Usually just about the time I feel like I pretty much know an awful lot about horses, one of them bucks me off in the mud. And that reminds me, yes, I don't know quite as much as I think I know. And I need to back up here and learn more and be more humble and accept the lessons that this animal has to teach me. So it's sad, I think, but it's historically, it's been true that most people in a horse and human team, especially one that isn't very functional, assume that they know best and that the communication is going to be one way rather than mutual. I will tell the horse what to do and the horse will do it. Well, those of us who ride a lot know that it doesn't work that way.
Right.
There are many times when the horse doesn't follow our orders, so to speak, or has a different opinion. This is an animal with a mind of its own. Mm. And so it's very different than any other sport, or at least than many other sports are, when, you know, where the equipment is inanimate and you have a lot more control over it than you do over a horse.
Yeah. Yeah, it reminds me of this time of the year, we're getting a lot of rough weather, you know, like as the seasons change. And when I first had my own horses and, you know, there weren't family members helping me work with them, I thought, well, gosh, you know, this horse or that horse is standing outside. It's raining. One time I had a new horse and I was like, I wonder if he doesn't know that he could get in the shed. Maybe I should go help him. And he knew very well. And in fact, he knew that we were also had a tornado warning was coming and that the shed was not a good idea. And so, yeah, so a light example to endorse your point that a lot of times their behaviors aren't necessarily what we would do, but they might be the right ones. So
yes, yeah. Absolutely. I've had many a horse tell me, let's not go for a walk right now because the weather's pretty unsettled. And I look around and I say, oh, come on, you know, it's not that bad. We can manage this. And 10 minutes later, I'll be in the middle of a lightning storm.
Yes, right.
And no shelter anywhere.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yep. And you're thinking,
so we'll learn over time.
Yes, exactly. Hopefully it doesn't take too many times for, yeah. And so I wanted to kind of end by asking you, since we are asking horses to participate so many in our ways and our human endeavors, you know, sports and therapy now, different hobbies or interests, what reflections do you think humans need? What do we have? I feel like we have ethical obligations here when we ask them to do these activities with us. And I'm curious your reflections on that.
I agree completely. I think we humans have tremendous ethical obligations to horses. And I'm sad to say that I think that we do not always meet those obligations as well as we could. It is perfectly possible to work with a horse in a responsible, kind way and to get results doing it that way. So I think that my new book, A Horse's World, gets into this more than Horse Brain, Human Brain did. And I have some plans for future things that will include ethics also. But I think it's really important to understand that we are interacting with a brain of a completely different biological class mm-hmm. from ours when we work with horses. And that's completely different than what we do with all of the predator brains, dogs, yes. cats, whales, dolphins, chimpanzees, gorillas, etc. All of those animals that science has studied in detail are predator animals. They have brains that are very similar to ours. Horses are one of the only prey animals that human beings interact with to a very intense degree or very strong degree. And because of that, I think that we have to be even more aware of our ethical responsibilities to understand what that horse is capable and not capable of doing or understanding. I think that we have to make accommodations for horses in terms of how much we expect from them. I believe that in all horse disciplines, we often expect too much too fast. Mm-hmm. And I really emphasize that I do believe that this is a problem across all disciplines. Unfortunately, I don't know of a single horse sport that is going to get out of this unscathed when we start looking very closely at how humans treat equines. And like I say, I think that we can do much better. I don't think it will even be that hard to do. I don't think we will have to change things dramatically to do a lot better. I think the biggest change is going to be right up here in mm-hmm. our minds, that we need to become more aware of what the differences are so that we can begin to work with horses' brains instead of against them.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. Speaking of your new book, maybe you could tell us a little bit about that, because I feel like you are on the leading edge of this conversation. And so maybe you can let us know about your upcoming book and things you're up to the rest of the year, because I think there are quite a few.
I'd be happy to. Thank you. My next book is called A Horse's World, A Neuroscientist's Journey into the Equine Mind. And it is available for pre-order now, but it won't be released until June of 2026. So we're in the process of getting it all ready and getting it printed. And it's being published by Little Brown, which is just a fantastic publisher. They are very enthusiastic about this book and have bent over backward to make sure that it is getting all of the frills that it needs. And the idea here is that this is a narrative nonfiction science book, and it is written for general readers, most of whom will probably have never touched a horse, but they think horses are pretty and they would like to know more about them. And along the way, the book offers kind of the next iteration of new research after Horse Brain, Human Brain came out. So it looks at some of the same topics, but it updates the research that had been done back in 2020 when Horse Brain, Human Brain first came out. So it's really written for both general readers and for horse people of all sorts. And it's narrative nonfiction because the whole thing has been built on the framework of one horse's development from age 2 until about age 8, wow. Which are the most critical years of a horse's training and learning and figuring out what this human world is all about and what people expect from him. And one thing that Horse Brain, Human Brain did not do was to really look at the building of trust and connection between a human and a horse. And this new book, A Horse's World, does that. It looks very carefully at how the connection is built between this horse, who is the main character, and the author, who is me. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it's received, but I hope people will like it.
Oh, it sounds fascinating. Thank you. And I think you have some events. You have an event coming up with us. We're honored to host you in May for a talk about kind of maybe both of your books a little bit and some of what we discussed here today.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about some of the neurological reasons that horses make such effective therapy animals. Because, you know, there's a lot of talk about, well, why don't we just do this with a dog or a cat or, you know, whatever. And there are some things about the way that horse brains work that actually make them excellent as therapy animals. And a dog's brain would not be able to do that in the same way.
Right. Yes, thank you. It's so lovely to have you here. It's just really an honor. You and I have been talking for a while about the variety of ways I'm fascinated and intrigued by your work. Yeah, so how can people who want to follow your work or see what you're up to? I think you do a lot of events. And so any other ways that people can get in touch with you, or what's the best way to?
Yes, I have a Facebook page and an Instagram account under the name Janet Jones Horse Brains. I also have a website. That's probably the best thing to look at because from there you can link up to just about everything else. The website is janet-jones.com. Be sure to remember the hyphen, otherwise you get Janet Jones, a real estate agent. It's somewhere in the southern United States. I don't remember her state, but her name pops right up. So janet-jones.com. And there on the website, you can find a list of upcoming events. There is a whole collection of podcast interviews that I do and links that you can go directly from the website right into any one of those interviews and listen to it. This one will also be there when it comes out. And there are descriptions of both books, biographical information about me, and just a lot of interesting stuff. I also write, I have a column that I write for Psychology Today magazine. And so people can find me there. And I have a column for Horse Network. And I think there will be more of that kind of thing coming up with this new book. There's been a lot of interest in kind of a more general level of media interest. In other words, people who are not necessarily horse people, but are just interested in animal cognition and animal behavior, and they want to know more about what horses do and why.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you are on the edge of a very important topic that I hope most of the world starts to pay attention to as we move through the next few decades. So anything else that you want us to know before we stop for today?
I can't think of anything. People can contact me through my website also. So if somebody has a specific question, I will be, it takes me some time, but I do try to respond to all everyone. So I will continue to try to do that. And Brenda, thank you so much for this. I've really enjoyed talking with you. And I'm looking forward to the event in May when we do the webinar.
So. Me too. Yes. Awesome. Thank you so much. And well, we'll see you in May.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. This concludes my interview with Dr. Janet Jones, but it doesn't conclude my work with her. As we discussed, she will be presenting a course with us in May. There are links to the show notes so you could sign up for that. It is open to all audiences and all interests. You can hear as she's describing her work continues to expand its reach in terms of audiences who find this helpful to their daily lives and work, like I do as a mental health therapist. And then in the fall, we will be hosting an interdisciplinary, as in everyone welcome, book club of her upcoming book as well. And you'll see links in the show notes for that as well. Thanks. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time.